Here from Nick Mitchell in Bradford saying, nice to hear Pulp in Session. My girlfriend Janine's upstairs listening in bed while I'm slaving away like a fool on some freelance work. Could you cheer us both up by playing something nice? Well, how about the next one from Pulp? This is another tune, actually, which will occur in a different form on the forthcoming LP. It's called I Love Life.
Here comes your bedtime story. I've sentenced you to life. Don't think twice. It's the only reason I'm alive. I feel alright as long as I don't forget to breathe. Breathe in, breathe in, breathe out. Look at all these buildings and houses. I love my life.
All right.
As the old song says, the cats are stomping on their heels and toes. That's Pulp in Session. One more from them before the end of the programme. That's called I Love Life. And thanks to Sam Morby and George from Swindon for their various emails. And, of course, everybody else has sent an email in the course of the programme. We read them all, or the bulk of them anyway, but can't read them all out on the radio because otherwise it would just turn into an email programme, which would be nice in its way, but soon it would be nicer to have music, I think, linking the emails. And have we sent George from Swindon his recent... the prize he won recently on this programme?
We're not sending it out till Friday.
We're not?
No.
Is that some form of punishment? Or?
No, it's because that's when we're getting them.
Oh, right, OK, fair enough. Because he'll be complaining to us. I know what he's like. This is Areogram.
Promise I won't care.
Another winner from your Chemical Underground Records, the LP A Story in White by Area Gram, and that track was called Hatred. And a tune coming up now from this demo CD from Cowcube, and he has put his email address in there, so I suppose that's probably how he sells copies of the record, so I suppose it'd be fair for me to give it to you. And I think you ought to get in touch with him, because I think he's a really clever lad, and he's got a sense of humour too, which is rare in this den. Well, it's not that rare, but I mean, you don't hear much in music, so it's cowcube@hotmail.com, as simple as that, cowcube@hotmail.com, and you'll be able to find out about this demo CD, which is very, very good indeed, I have to say. Here's a tune from it, Grooved for Extra Flavour.
Let's see if there's some song that we can do together. I know one.
Now, we'll try it with a hip, rip, pop flavour.
I like to think that one of these days there'll be a plaque up, one of those blue plaques up on his house in Stowmarket saying Cowcube lived here and giving the dates. That's Grooved for Extra Flavour from his, well, it's an LP, it's a kind of demo LP, cowcube@hotmail.com if you want to know more about that. And an email here from James, 17, from Nottingham, saying hopefully he'll get this in time for tonight's show. I have done, James. I've got a heavy week ahead of me, packing for Sweden and multiple other stresses to do with university mainly. And then he asked me to play something by Armin van Helden, which in the, as I say, in the traditions of this programme, I don't have. I mean, I'd have to carry all of my records with me all of the time, which would be impractical. And it's the kind of thing that... I was thinking about this the other day, you know, this new thing where they're trying to make it impossible to drive cars in and out of towns. So Ken Livingstone, I mean, I admire Ken Livingstone in a lot of ways, but he wants me every week to drag two sacks of mail, CDs, you know, vinyl 12 inches and demo cassettes and things like this, drag them down to Oxford Circus Tube Station, get on the central line, drag drag them to Liverpool Street, take them to a train, which is almost certainly late if it's there at all, and then travel out to Stowmarket and then make my own way from Stowmarket Station to home. I mean, is that really practical? I have to bring the car into town. I have no choice, and I'm going to be penalised for it and be treated like a rotter. And I don't think that's fair. This is Major Matt Mason, USA. Mr. Softy. Come on, Matt, don't mess about.
Break up your hull, you're falling down around it. Pick up your cup, I'll fill it up with coffee. A hiccup, my stomach's full of Mr. Softy. Now wake up and get this big guy off me. And every time I get somewhere, something behind, and every time I say I don't mind, I mind. Every time I say I don't mind, break up.
I like that line about fourth down, I must say. That's Matt Mason, who seems to prefer to be known as Major Matt Mason USA on Shoeshine Records. The LP is called Me, 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 and that was Mr. Softy. And I said, actually, have I run out of emails? Neat. Oh, no, here's another one. Hold on, there's a big pile of them here. This is from Nathan Jones in New York saying, do you have any more on Suvaris? Not sure if that's how you spell it. The track sounded very much like Black Heart Procession. They reminded me of someone. I'm not sure that it's Black Heart Procession, and I'm not sure that you spelt it correctly either. It's Souvaris, and we'll try and play some more of their stuff, but not the 28-minute track tonight, because there isn't time, actually, because obviously Marianne Hobbs comes up after the Midnight News, and it says here, tonight's rock show is at the Kerrang Awards. Join Marianne from midnight to check out what went on. There you go. And tomorrow this programme has Lift to Experience live from our Maida Vale studios in front of an invited audience, as it were. And then on Thursday night it's a repeat of a classic session from Culture and other bits and pieces, the sort of culture-related stuff. And Nathan Jones goes on to say, just seeing that you have Lift to Experience in session on Wednesday night, and as I just hinted, Nathan, they're going to be playing live in the studio. Obviously, you won't get the full benefit of that in New York, but you will be able to listen to it, as will all Radio 1 listeners. Right, that's the commercial moment over with. I think, actually, that's another thing, you know, at the football match on Saturday. I mean, you know, I love going to football, I really do. But at Portman Road, we've always been lucky in the sense that where we sit, the speakers didn't work terribly well, the PA system was awful. So you've got a kind of boom going like this in the background, but you actually couldn't really understand what was being said, and it wasn't very loud. They've now got it very loud, and you can hear every damn word. And every word seems to be telling you who sponsored the, you know, the corner flags and the halfway line and the net and all this kind of stuff. And you get that three or four times during the match, at least three times at the weekend, and I don't want it, really. You know, I don't want to know all of that. So I don't care who sponsors all the match ball and things. I mean, I know they have to do it in order to get the money, but come on, give us a break. This is The Dragon on Poison Records, The Streets.
Responsibility that you have to do. With the drums, you have the capacity to create a mood for any amount of people. Doesn't matter if you're playing in a club, if you're playing in a hall, if you're playing in the streets. It's a responsibility that you have to do. With the drums, you have the capacity to create a mood for any amount of people. Doesn't matter if you're playing in a club, if you're playing in a hall, if you're playing in the streets. We'll be right back.
This is a gold-coloured 12-inch on Poison Records from The Dragon. It's called The Streets. And this next is a record that arrived in the house over the weekend. It's by Thoria, which sounds like a plant, doesn't it? Oh, the Thoria are lovely for this time of year. But it's a band with an LP coming out on Red Crust Records in September. Oh, no, it's not. It's a limited edition in September. But on Red Crust Records, this is Keep 'Em in the Attic. Coming out on September the 24th as a single, that's Thoria, T-H-O-R-I-A, like Gloria, but not. Keep 'Em in the Attic is the title of it. And here's tonight's contribution from Charlie Coons. 1939, that's Charlie Coons, K-U-N-Z, from the LP on Prism Leisure Records, the very best of Charlie Coons. Three tunes, South of the Border, I Paid for That Lie I Told You, and Boom Sadaisy. And I very much like the fact that if there was an afterlife, which there isn't, but if there was one, I like the idea that my dad would be up there thinking, what is that damn fool boy of mine doing now? Because Charlie was his favourite artist. This is Pulp, the last one from them, and this isn't on the LP, actually, this particular song. It's called Duck Diving. Fades in again. Do you know I've done something amazingly stupid? That's not the tune I said it was at all. That was Sunrise. Incidentally, while the machine sets itself up again, duck diving, it says here, the words are taken from a story called Return to Air by Philippa Pierce. Oh, no, come on, I've got to do better than that. This has really messed up at the end of the programme. You know, it's going to be such a... just build and build, you know, to a bit of a climax, but anyway...
Ponds are very big, so that one end people bathe, and at the other end they fish. Old chaps with bald heads sit on folding stools and fish with rods and lines. And little kids squeeze through the railings and wade out into the water to fish with nets. But the water's much deeper at our end of the ponds, and that's where we bathe. You're not allowed to bathe there unless you can swim, but I've always been able to swim. They used to say that was because fat floats. Diving board, thank you. I have to take my glasses off to go into the water, and I can't see without them. And I'm just not going to dive, even from the lowest diving board, and that's that. And they stopped nagging me about it long ago. Then this summer, they were all on at me to learn duck diving. You're swimming on the surface of the water, and suddenly you upend yourself just like a duck, and dive down deep into the water, and perhaps you swim about a bit underwater, and then come up again. I dare say ducks begin doing it soon after they're born. It's different for them. So I was learning to duck dive, to swim down to the bottom of the ponds and pick up a brick they'd thrown in and bring it back up again. You practice that in case you have to rescue anyone from drowning. Of course, they'd be bigger and heavier than a brick, but I suppose you have to begin with bricks and work up gradually to people. The swimming instructor said, I'm gonna throw the brick in. It was a brick with a bit of old white flannel round it to make it show up underwater. He made everyone else come out of the water to give me a chance, and they were standing watching. I could see them blurred along the bank, and I could hear them talking and laughing. But there wasn't a sound in the water, except me just treading water gently, waiting. And then I saw the brick go over my head as the instructor threw it, and there was a splash as it went into the water ahead of me, and I thought, I can't do it. My legs won't upend this time. They feel just flabby. They'll float, but they won't upend. They can't upend. It's different for ducks. But while I was thinking all that, I'd taken a deep breath, and then my head really went down, and my legs went up into the air, and I could feel them there, just air around them, and then there was water around them. Because I was going down into the water after all. Right down into the water. Straight down. The water was like a thick greeny-brown lemonade, with wispy little things moving very slowly in it. Down we went, and the lemonade looked quite wet from the water, and it became just a dark blackish brown. And you'd wonder you could see anything at all. Especially as the bit of white flannel seemed to have come off the brick by the time it reached the bottom and I'd caught up with it. The brick looked different down there anyway, and it had already settled right into the mud, and there was only one corner left sticking up. I dug into the mud with my fingers and got hold of the thing, and then I didn't think of anything except getting up again with it into the air. But touching the bottom like that, it stirred up the mud, so that I began to go up through a thick cloud of it. It made me feel I might be getting lost. Perhaps I'd swum underwater too far. Perhaps I'd come up at the far end of the ponds amongst all the fishermen and foul their lines, and perhaps get a fish hook caught in me. Perhaps I just wasn't going to find the top again. The air again. The funny thing was, I only began to get afraid on the way back, even though I was going up quite quickly and the water was already changing from brown black to green brown and then to bright lemonade. I could almost see the sun shining through the water. I was getting so near the surface. It wasn't until then that I felt really frightened. I knew I was moving much too slowly. I knew I would never reach the air again in time. And then suddenly I was at the surface. And pond water was trickling down inside my nose and into my mouth, which I hate. But there was air all around and above for me to breathe, to live. And I might live to be 100 now and keep a sweet shop of my own and walk on the moon and breed mastiffs and rescue someone from drowning and be awarded a medal for it and be interviewed on TV. And then I noticed they were shouting from the bank. They were cheering and shouting, and the instructor was helloing with his hands around his mouth. I turned round and swam to the bank, and they hauled me out and gave me my glasses to have a good look at what I'd brought up from the bottom. Because it wasn't a brick. It was just about the size and shape of one, but it was a tin. An old, old tin box with no paint left on it. An old brown-black slime from the bottom of the ponds. It was as heavy as a brick because it was full of mud. We get excited as we did. There was nothing there but mud. We strained all the mud through our fingers, but there wasn't anything else there. Not even a bit of old sandwich or the remains of bait. I don't know how that tin could have got there. Anyway, it must have been there for years and years by the look of it. When you think, it might have stayed there for years and years longer if I hadn't found it. Perhaps stayed sunk underwater forever. I clean the tin up now, and I keep it on the mantelpiece at home with my coin collection in it. I had to duck dive later for another brick, and I got it all right, without being frightened at all. But it didn't seem to matter as much as coming up with a tin. I shall keep that tin as long as I live. And I might live to be 100.
Worth Getting Right, I think. That's Pulp, the last from them. Duck Diving is the title of it, and as I say, that is not on the LP. Whatever became of the King?
Resentment rides high, but emotions won't grow. And we're changing our ways, taking different roads. Love will tear us apart. Bedroom so cold, turned away on your side. Is my timing that floor? Our respect runs so dry. Yet there's still this appeal that we kept all our lives. And love will tear us apart again. Failings exposed. There's a
taste in my mouth. Desperation takes hold. Yet it's something so good, just can't push you no more.
The original, of course, were those Kings of the Wugga Wugga Sound, Joy Division. But this is The King from the LP Gravelands, a bit of a classic in its way, and Love Will Tear Us Apart. Tomorrow it's Lift to Experience, live from our Maida Vale studio. Thanks very much for listening to this.
Blooded of the lion's tame. Not sure. I just doubt. So I sway along, cause my rhythm's free. Moonlight is always the best of company.
Search 2, a new adventure serial in time and space by James Follett. Waking from 15 years suspended animation aboard the Starship Challenger, Telson, Shana, Darv, and Astra are horrified to learn that Angel 1 and Angel 2 had not allowed their children, Bran and Elka, to join them. The result is that Bran and Elka are now in their late teens, and Bran has taken over as the Challenger's commander. Earth Search 2, Part 4. Solaria.
Tidy?
What?
You can fetch some more hot drinks, please. All right for everyone?
Yes.
I don't see why I should do anything for any of you. 15 years.
Yes, Tidy, so you keep telling us.
15 years you abandoned me while you slept in that suspended animation thing.
Will someone get that android out of my sight before
I... All right, I'm going. At least I had 15 years without you messing things up all the time.
Obviously, he doesn't know much about suspended animation.
Does it matter?
No, I suppose not.
They're staring across at us again. We've got to stop talking about them as they. I can't help it, Shana. I spend every waking minute thinking about Elka. But that's not Elka, not my little Elka. It's a 19-year-old stranger full of clichés from the worst videos in the library. Oh, Darth, I think I'm going insane.
Hey,
it would be better if the angels had killed us. Oh, why do they have to do this to us?
Don't cry. Come on.
Telson, we've got to come to terms with this situation. And we can't turn back the clock, and we can't go on ignoring them.
Well, I refuse to come to terms with an arrogant youngster who struts around with a PD weapon on his hip and who said that he would happily kill me if I didn't obey his orders. I don't care if he is our son.
But it's not Bran's fault. He and Elka have been under the influence of the Guardian Angels for 15 years. And it's up to us to warn them about the angels and to break that influence.
If you know a way, you can start now. Elka's coming over.
Hi, everyone. Mind if I join you? Good to see you're all eating properly at last. Best meal of the day, breakfast.
I don't know why I...
Oh, Tidy!
What?
I could use one of those. There's a good fella.
She wants me to fetch her a drink?
Don't argue, Tidy.
I never argue. I'm always sweetness and light.
You know, it's fantastic the way you've programmed that android. He worried about you the entire 15 years you were in SA. Weird.
What do you want, Elka?
Bran and I have been chewing you over, trying to decide what's best for you. Isn't that right, A2? Hey, A2, we're talking about you. He's getting slow.
That is correct, Elka.
4 days and you're still taking your meals at a separate table. That's weirdness. We're all family.
Yes, well, then tell Bran to stop threatening us. Anyway, we need time to adjust.
Oh, you've got to do as Bran says, people. He can get really flaky if things don't go his way. Right now, he's got some work lined up for you.
What sort of work?
Something to do with an artifact he and A1 have spotted. It's big and weird. Just what we need for phase 2 of the Challenger's rebuilding program. Someone's got to chase after it. We've never operated a shuttle, and in any case, Bran won't leave the ship with you here.
What is this artifact?
Oh, I don't know. But chasing after it in a shuttle sounds like fun for you. All that business with ballistics and velocities and distances. Weird things like that just zoom over my head. I'll tell Bran you'll be pleased to help
him. Elka, wait a minute. Elka, when we were your age, we felt the same way about the Guardian Angels as you do now. We thought they were good.
Oh, they're more than that. They're great. Although they have been a bit slow recently. You know what could be causing that?
They're not great. They're evil. They want to find the Earth, don't they?
Oh, sure they do.
Do you know why?
Well, sure. It's our home.
They want to rule the Earth. They regard themselves as the greatest intelligences and consider the domination of the Earth as their right.
I'll tell Bran that you'll help people.
An interesting conversation.
We're glad you found it so, One.
Inaccurate, of course, as you will soon discover.
So much for your memory, Darv. We're lost.
You had trouble finding your way back to the central switching room, remember? Okay. So the angels moved their switching room, but they couldn't possibly re-engineer the location of the main control room. It was a part of the Challenger's fabric.
I agree with you, but all these corridors on this level are new, therefore they have moved it.
Can I be of assistance, Darl? Telson?
We're lost, One. We're supposed to be seeing Bran in the observatory, but we took a wrong turning.
We are sorry to hear that, Telson. We thought that by now you were familiar with the Challenger's new layout.
Remember how I used to enjoy exploring as a kid, One? I haven't changed.
All the information that was lost all those years ago in the great meteoroid strike is no longer of consequence, Darv. There are now no uncontrolled zones on the Challenger. Since the completion of phase 1 of the rebuilding program, we have established total jurisdiction over all the regions of the ship.
We're delighted to hear it, One. What does phase 2 of the rebuilding program involve?
Bran is waiting for you in the observatory. He will tell you everything you need to know.
artifact is now centered on the screen, Bren.
Excellent, too.
What is it?
That's near enough, Telson. I don't mind you eyeing my PD weapon, but I prefer you to eye it from a distance.
So what is that thing?
Its origins of no interest to me. What matters is that it is metallic, according to gravimetric data, and it possesses a mass of 1 billion tons. More than enough for what I have in mind. Because it is in a form of a very shallow dish, fragmenting it into manageable pieces for sending to the Challenger will not pose too many problems for you. One of the shuttles has been equipped with a plasma discharge cannon.
What do the angels want with 1 billion tons of metal?
It's what I want with it, Telson. My ambitions and the wishes of the guardian angels are one and the same.
So what exactly is the metal for? And what are you going to build with it?
A special team of androids are at present under construction. Their job will be to armor the Challenger with a one-inch